Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Casino City Gang, your podcast for all things gambling. I am hosting today. I'm Aaron Todd, speaking to you live from Casino City's worldwide headquarters just outside of Boston. Joining me, as always, here in the studio is Dan Podhizer, and joining us from the great state of Michigan, which is just so friendly, it looks like it's reaching out to shake Canada's hand, is Vin Narayanan. How's everyone doing today?
Doing well.
Doing well. And I promise not to make up stories about watching Notre Dame play Michigan during my childhood.
For those of you unaware of what Vin's talking about, he is referring to an article where someone, I didn't read the article, I just saw what you had posted on Facebook. Can you give us a quick recap?
Both Mark May and Skip Bayless made up memories about watching Notre Dame play Michigan during their childhood, which wasn't possible given the time frames they were talking about.
And
yeah, apparently Mark May grew
so
up in
perfect.
Oh, it's so perfect. Mark May grew up in upstate New York. He's like, I remember growing up in upstate New York watching Notre Dame play Michigan every year. There was just a problem with that. They didn't play Michigan when he was growing up. and then you had Skip Bayless go, and I remember watching Notre Dame play Michigan all the way back to Bubba Smith. Well, there's one problem. Bubba Smith played for Michigan State, and they didn't play back then either.
Is this just the result of when talking heads don't value facts in their analysis? And this is just the most recent blatant example of this, but I mean, these guys do things like this all the time. It's just not as obvious, but I'm glad. I think it was Deadspin that first picked it up, and I'm really glad this happened because it just shows how like awful these quote unquote analysts really are.
Well, one thing's for sure. There is no better analysis for your NFL spread betting needs than the Casino City Gang. It's an exciting day for sports fans. The NFL season gets underway tonight. Baltimore is facing Denver in the season opener. And we'll have plenty of NFL news later today. And, of course, we will be making all of our picks against the spread in every game on the schedule. And we'll get to that later in the show. But we're going to talk about a few other things first. Most notably, the topics of the day include John McCain's new iPhone poker habit, party poker segregating players based on skill, and in addition to betting against the spread, all the other fun ways you can bet on the NFL this season. So let's start things off with what everyone's really been talking about for about the last 24, 48 hours. John McCain, in a hearing at the Senate on, the possibility of going to war with Syria, caught by a Washington Post photographer playing a social, play money poker game on his iPhone. Vin, you're our resident expert on Congress. Is this as big a deal as people are making it out to be?
Well, only if McCain was losing to Obama. But probably not. I really want to know McCain's screen name, just so I can get it out of the game with him. Look, one of the not so hidden secrets about Washington D.C. is during these hearings, no one pays attention. During these great hearings, where everyone's supposed to be informed on the issues of their day, there are frequently two or three legislators in the room, if that. Sometimes a little more, but there are frequently very few legislators in the room. And they are frequently reviewing documents and doing everything but paying attention to the witness's testimony. And they have prepared questions. They saw the testimony in advance, and so they have questions based on the prepared testimony. But I'll tell you what, if a witness came up there and completely deviated from their prepared testimony, there's a good chance the legislators would ask the same questions they prepared for because they wouldn't even notice the witness had deviated from the testimony. So, no, the fact that he wasn't paying attention isn't new. Perhaps the form and the way he wasn't paying attention was new. I always had him pegged more for a words with friends guy than a poker guy. But, hey, it's it's not that big a shock. What does crack me up though is the photographer caught.
Yeah, and Aaron, you were sort of going off on this on Twitter the other night in that the poker part of this isn't even really all that relevant. I mean, it's like I guess it's cool for our industry that he was playing a poker app, but like you mentioned, it wouldn't matter if he was playing poker or Candy Crush. It's still just outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, the game of choice is really the fact is that it's. I understand what Vin's saying, you know, in terms of people, you know, legislators kind of floating in and out and divided attentions and, you know, staff members, you know, advising them on different things, and they're, you know, often not listening to the testimony. You know, to be honest, I'm in an ideal world. Would that happen? No. Do I understand that that's probably going to happen? Yes. But I guess the gravity of the situation is such that it just seems to me completely inappropriate. If it had been a hearing on, you know, and I'm struggling to come up with something, but if it had been a hearing about, you know, whether we should, you know, continue to impose tariffs on a country, then, you know, is that, would I be as upset about it? Not really. I think it's the fact that it's a hearing on the possibility of striking Syria, you know, the possibility of, you know, it's a very grave situation, and it just seems very, and the fact that he tried to make light of it, you know, and I used to actually really like McCain, but, you know, to me, this was just it wasn't a good idea. And it wasn't a good idea to make light of it.
But it bears, you know, what it does is it pulls back the curtain on these hearings. And whether this is a great deliberative body or whether this is a body that's made up all of its minds already and is in the process of making up all its mind and the rest is for show. I mean, there is a distinct possibility. There are a lot of congressmen and senators that haven't made up their minds. But they're not making up their minds based on the hearings. You know, they might read the written testimony, and that might help them. But they're not making up their minds based on the hearings and the questioning of these folks. And so that begs the question, why bother?
That's sort of like,
why go through the song and dance?
That's sort of like the town hall debates that political candidates have. It's like, you know, it's the final hour of the presidential debate, and if you haven't made up your mind by then, is a final debate really going to change it? I mean, it's the same thing for these senators. It's like, is a hearing really going to change your mind on whether or not we should declare war? You know,
but that's
war.
The point. It should. And that's why theoretically you're holding the hearing. You are holding the hearing because you want to get the necessary information to make an informed decision. That's theoretically why the hearing's going on. You're bringing experts who know what's going on in the region to discuss these sorts of things. There's a great tradition in the Senate where you have debates over this. And yeah, you make attempts at persuasion, but the attempts at persuasion by other senators are aimed as much at constituents and the public as they are fellow senators. And even that wasn't happening. I mean, basically what you have with McCain playing the poker on the iPhone is a very tacit admission that none of this matters. Everything's going to be decided behind closed doors. And that just can't be good for the Senate. It can't be good for democracy.
Now, to bring this back to what our podcast is usually about, there have been some folks in the poker world that have said that this signals that Congress should move forward with online gambling legislation, that somehow this event shows that maybe Congress, maybe the Senate is ready to move forward on online poker legislation in the U.S. at a federal level. Vin, can you please describe why that is a ridiculous and ludicrous thing to say?
Well, it is, because no one cares. You had an old man bored during a hearing playing iPhone poker. What was it, Zynga? I couldn't even tell what room it was. No.
I believe it was revealed to be VIP poker, which I don't think I'd ever even heard of.
Yeah, it doesn't signal anything. it signals that people are willing to play poker for free chips for fun, and that's okay with them because it's for free and it's for fun. You want to know what people care about? Real money homes. They care about real money gaming. They don't care about people playing for free. I mean, that's not like Allen Iverson in practice. He doesn't care about practice. It's ridiculous. This signals nothing. This means nothing. This is going absolutely nowhere. You're taking an event completely and totally out of context and trying to use it to burnish your argument. It makes you a good politician, but it really doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things. People need to shut up.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the gist of what we should be talking about, is that it's a non-story, and the poker industry trying to make it into a story is absolutely absurd. Now, it would be nice if somehow this contributed to some federal legislation that legalized online poker, but in reality, it's nobody thinks that. And I think it's just the fact that, oh, he was playing poker. Some people are trying to connect those dots, and it's a huge stretch.
Yeah, well, I will say this, though. If John Pappas is smart, this little anecdote works its way into his next testimony that no one's listening to in front of Congress.
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely should. Most importantly, I think everybody wants John McCain to be playing real money poker because he admitted to Wolf Blitzer that he had lost thousands of play money dollars in his social game. And if anyone has ever played any of these games, it's actually they're really easy to beat. So John McCain, if you would ever like to join us for a real money game,
maybe this is why he and Obama don't get along.
Why? Because Obama's good.
Reportedly, Obama keeps taking his fake money.
Oh, I see what's happening. Well, John McCain or President Obama, if you would ever like to join the Casino City home game. You're welcome at the Todd Tavern anytime. You can come on down to the basement, and we'll be happy to deal you into a low stakes poker game.
Do you accept government bonds?
Is
fine.
Hey, if I can cash them in later, then I'm all for it. Maybe I'll take them at 50 cents on the dollar.
Do you think if they're a high enough ranking official, they can get access to God mode?
Oh, Lord. Well, sticking with poker, let's move on now to Party Poker, which recently announced that it will be rating all of its players on its site based on skill. They'd already kind of done that to some degree. Earlier this year, it was revealed that Party Poker was hiding some tables from their best players, so they were not able to join the fishiest of tables, so to speak. And so those players were protected from the highly skilled players who couldn't join their game. Whereas, the players who were not rated as highly skilled could join any table they wanted and play wherever they wanted. It sounds like they're going to move forward with that strategy. They're going to, rate all their players based on skill. And part of their strategy is going to be moving the room from a pure, real money experience where, there's no restriction on where anyone can play. And they're going to add some social gaming strategy. They're going to have ladders of achievement. If you've ever played on Zynga or if you've played on Ivy Poker or any of those Facebook poker games, every time you win a hand, you get experience points. Every time you play a hand, you get experience points. If you win with Ace King, you get like some special award. If you crack aces, you get special awards, et cetera, et cetera. So Party Poker is going to add that element into their game. Dan, Party Poker has fallen to fifth on Poker Scout's rankings of poker networks. Do you think the strategy is going to help or hurt Party Poker?
And Aaron, we were talking about this a lot when we first read about it, but I'm not sure if it's going to help or hurt because, as you pointed out in our previous conversation, the lifeblood of the industry is new players and inexperienced players, essentially bad players, who are going to lose a lot of money. Now, you could say that it's a good strategy to attract bad players by saying, well, you're only going to play against other bad players. But on the other hand, it seems like what they're really doing is rebranding the game of poker itself. Poker has never been about ranking systems or playing players at your skill level. The allure of poker, the thrill of poker, ever since Chris Moneymaker, which started the boom, was anybody can beat anybody, and anybody can become the next millionaire. You can sit down with the pros and beat them. And this sort of goes away from that whole philosophy. So I'm not sure if it's actually going to help them. I mean, it could help them in the short run, but in the long run, I don't really see a net gain for them.
Now, Vin, you talked to folks at Amaya at a gaming conference, so it might have been almost a year ago at this point, and they had been talking about doing some social things as well. Can you talk about their strategy and you know, how Party It looks like is adopting some of that strategy, but also moving, you know, players in a skill, you know, segregate. It sounds like they're going to be segregating players based on skill. And do you think that that's a solid strategy, or is this kind of a Hail Mary?
Well, I don't think it doesn't sound like they're going to be segregating players on skill. It sounds like you're going to be able to see their ranking. So when you sit down at a table or you go to a table, you can see, oh, wow, these players are really good. I don't want to sit down at this table. Or, wow, these players are sort of my skill level, and I want to sit down and play with them. If that's the way it works, I think this is actually a pretty good strategy, because I know that, look, and I don't play nearly as much online poker as you guys do, but I know that when I do hop online, I have zero interest in playing against people that are substantially better than me, because that's not how I'm going to learn and get better as a player. I will eventually learn and get better as a player against those people, because at some point, in order to grow, you have to play those guys. But initially, you know, I want to sit down at low-stakes games and relatively low-stakes games against people of equal or maybe slightly better playing level than I am, and master that and move my way up. I mean, that seems to be a natural progression. And if Party Poker gives me and allows me the opportunity to do that, I could definitely see playing there. In terms of social gaming, look, we know social gaming mechanics work. There is a reason why Candy Crush Saga works, and there's a reason why all the different social games work. So when you take and Farmville works and all of those games, so there's a reason why those games work. You know, when you introduce a few of those gaming elements into online poker, that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's the thing that's going to keep experienced players and novices relatively happy. And the reason it's going to do that is because it's like a bad big jackpot. You get bonus stuff for playing certain hands a certain way, or getting certain hands. And yeah, why not? That's like, you know, at a home game where you call and you give a player extra money for winning a game with a hammer. That's a social gaming mechanic. And so that's just being introduced in online poker, and Amaya's been pretty successful with that. I think Party's going to be fairly successful with that, but it's not the social gaming mechanics that are ultimately going to make or break the site. It's whether the skill rating is going to work, and I don't have a problem with it. I think it makes sense. Now, if they're segregating players on skill, so let's just say the sharks can't see me or I can't see the sharks, then I've got a bigger problem with it. But if I can see everyone's out there and see what their ratings are and they can see what my ratings are, I'm okay with that.
So the issue there is that they are segregating. What they're doing is they're not allowing players in the upper tier skill level to see tables designed only for the lower tier. So while the lower tier can sit wherever they want, the upper tier essentially can only play with people in their tier, which to me, I mean, that's just going to drive – you know, players who actually plan to make money playing poker, they're just going to drive them away, because you're not going to play against players of equal skill level if you actually plan on making money.
That's not the way I read what they were doing. Maybe I was just reading it completely wrong. But, I mean, I think that's what they got in trouble for earlier this year, and I thought they were moving away from that. And they were just moving to a straight rating system.
I'm, it's uncertain when they launch. They're relaunching everything today, and you know, we'll see what that relaunch looks like. I don't know if everything's going to come out today, or if they're going to be doing things, you know, a little bit more down the road. I guess we'll have to wait to see what, you know. Party Poker hasn't really revealed. I tried to search around to find out for sure what was going to happen. The thing that I find tough about the rating system is that I think it will become part of the larger game of poker at Party Poker to game the rating system. And I don't know how their rating system is going to work, but maybe people will play a bunch of low-stakes games really badly, and then when they move into high stakes, they'll look like a fish. You know, so that could happen, and then they look like a fish, and then people think that they're really bad, but in reality they're really good. I think that's really bad for the game if you have people trying to game a rating system. So that the segregation, I think the problem with segregation is, let's be honest, 90% of people who play poker think that they can beat the game. The reality is only 10 to 15% can. So if you take away that 75% who think they can beat the game but really probably can't, and tell them, we're going to put you in games of players with equal skill level, well, you're going to think to yourself, well, normally when I play games, I'm one of the best players at the table. And so, therefore, I don't want to play with people who are as skilled as me. And even though the reality is for the majority of people who play poker, this would be a better system, the human ego is going to get in the way, and I don't think it's going to work.
The other thing, too, is most losing players who continue to be losing players don't track their own play. And they continue to play and they continue to lose because they don't actually really realize how much they're losing over time, how bad of a player they actually are. So if the site starts exposing to all of these losing players, which is most players, that they are losing players and that they are not good, why would they expect them to keep coming back in the same rate that they used to? I mean, players who track themselves will make more informed decisions on, you know, what stakes play or whether to keep playing in general. So now that they're all being automatically tracked, they'll all make more informed decisions. And since most players are bad, that's not good for business. And it just can't be.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens when party pokers, you know, once everything shakes out and we see exactly what their plan is. You know, I think you look at where they're ranked right now. I mean, to be honest, PokerStars.it isn't far behind Party Poker, which is a worldwide network. So that tells you a lot. You know, Italy, PokerStars Italy client, just players in Italy who play on PokerStars isn't that much smaller. You know, the number of players who play there isn't much smaller than, you know, what Party Poker is able to get just about worldwide, other than the segregated markets. So
yeah,
I understand
but I
it.
I will say this. It's sort of tough to call Party Poker a global network anymore, though, because – and I'm not trying to defend Party Poker here. It's just sort of the way it is, in that Party Poker has restricted itself to regulated markets at this point for the most part. I'm sure they're in a couple of gray markets, but for the most part, they've restricted themselves to regulated markets. And part of restricting yourself in the regulated markets is most of those markets have walled themselves off from the rest of the world. And when you do that, your numbers are going to go down. Your liquidity numbers are going to go down by design. And so I understand why. Look, Party Poker's numbers have dropped for a variety of reasons. They're not nearly as competitive as they used to be. Their product hasn't kept up with the product offering to the other online poker rooms, and they've heard from a conscious business strategy, which is going after highly regulated markets, and all of that stuff combined has dropped Party Poker to fifth in the Poker Scout rankings. And so, I think it's important to sort of take that as a totality, and not just one individual piece.
Fair enough. Well, we'll see what happens. This is certainly a story we'll be tracking. You know, maybe this is the next revolution in internet poker, and maybe it's the death knell for party poker, or maybe it's somewhere in between. Most likely, that's the case. But we'll definitely keep an eye on it, and we're sure to talk about it in a future edition of the gang. We're going to move on to our last topic of the day before we get to our NFL picks. But we're going to go to Dan's column this week about top 10 ways you can bet on the NFL season. You know, this goes beyond just like, you know, well, you can pick against the spread, or you can pick, you know, over under totals. This is kind of a lot of these were you know, season long bets and those types of things. So Dan, I'm curious, how many of these 10, if you can, and by the way, you can read the column, of course, at CasinoCityTimes.com. Dan, I'm curious, how many of these 10 bets you are actually betting on this season? How many of these are you participating in?
Well, just taking a quick look through here, I'm currently in a confidence pool. I'm in a fantasy I'm in two fantasy head-to-head leagues, and I'm in a survivor pool or suicide pool. So right now I'm in three. However, there's still time for me to enter a few more. Not all of these are necessarily season-long bets. And we'll start at the bottom, my number 10, which is parlays. And as you guys know, parlays are basically just you have more than one bet on a betting card, and the odds pay out better than a normal 50-50 bet would. So if you have three bets on a betting card and they're all, you know, assuming they're 50-50 odds, it should pay about 7-1. Generally, it won't. Generally, pay somewhere in the 4-6-1 odds range, which is obviously not necessarily good for the bettor. But as I mentioned in the column, you know, if you're gonna bet on the NFL, and which is generally a losing proposition against the sportsbook, why not just go for the biggest odds you can get?
Why not go all odds?
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. If you go to a place like a locals casino in Vegas, like the Gold Coast, but if you go to a locals casino there, you'll see that the parlays are huge. There are more people playing parlays than doing straight up betting, and they are into it. And it's a lot of fun to watch as the games come down to the wire, and they've got their 3-team and 6-team parlays out, whether they're going to hit it. And there are a lot of happy people, and there are a lot of angry people at the end of games because of those parlays.
And the one thing I didn't mention in the column, and the cool thing about parlays is, you know, let's say you pick a 5-teamer, which is huge. You know, that pays out pretty high. If your last game is, say, the Monday night game, and you're 4-for-4 for your first four games, well, then you can hedge your bet on that Monday night game. So let's say you're slated to get paid out $2,000. Well, you bet $1,000 on the Monday night game against the other team, then you automatically win $1,000. You either win $2,000 and lose $1,000, or you win $1,000 and just don't win the parlay. So that's one strategy to sort of back out of your parlay, but also guarantee yourself income at the same time, which I think is nice. So the next bet I have on the list is...
I'm sorry. The one thing I do want to say is if you live in Delaware, you've got to do it at least once or twice. You've got the Delaware Lottery 15-for-15 parlay card. It's a $5 bet, and if you get all 15 right, then you get then you win $100,000. There aren't many places in the world where you can wager $5 and win $100,000.
And those probably terrible.
It's nearly impossible. It's nearly impossible to go 15-for-15. But that said, it's been done.
A couple
people have done it. Yeah, it's happened a couple times.
I went 16-for-16 twice last year, but it was in my confidence pool, and really it won me my weekly prize, but it didn't win me $100,000. I wish I had known about that. I would have bet on it every week. Okay, so our next bet we have is something that I made up, and it's the most passing yards in the game. So this is something that you do with your friends at the beginning of the season, and it works with Price is Right rules. So basically, the idea is you're not betting on which quarterback is going to throw the most yards in the game. You're betting on just what the highest amount of passing yards in a single game will be over the course of the season. And the number that you pick can't be more than the end total at the end of the year. So, for instance, Texans quarterback Matt Schaub threw for 527 yards last year. It was the third highest total in NFL history. You'd have to be out of your mind to pick a total that was over 527 yards. But if you did pick 528 yards as your pick, you would automatically be disqualified, even though you were most likely closest to the total. So generally, you know, you're probably going to pick somewhere in the 400-yard range, maybe in the 350 to 450 range. And it's just fun because, you know, you're at risk of going over at any time. And part of the strategy is making sure you don't go over, but you still are sort of betting on the highest total. Now, the one criticism of this bet that I received, I posted this column on Facebook, and a friend of mine instantly sent me a message criticizing this bet in that, you know, if you have too many people in the pool, you're going to end up with very narrow ranges for some people. You're going to end up with someone picking, say, 420 yards and someone picking 425 yards. Well, the person who picked 425 yards is almost basically eliminated at that point. They have a very narrow range where they can win the bet. But I still think it's fun. I think it's something that you can do with a few friends and keep things interesting throughout the year.
$1, Bob. But, you know, that's part of the game, you know, is that you've got to pick something, and if you end up with a narrow range, you know, how many times did you see on The Price is Right where someone would bid 900 and the next person would say 901? Well,
right.
The person who bid 900 got screwed. That's part of the game.
Well,
I think
no.
It might be fun to do this if you drafted every week. If you drafted every week and then you had a different draft order every week based on, you know, like then you'd have chances where you could screw other people over, and that would be kind of neat.
I like the every week bet, but I don't think you have to do it full on Price is Right style. Meaning, I think you can secretly pick the number you want, so you can't screw over someone else in the pool. It's just, you know, you write your number down on a slip of paper, and then everybody turns it over. So you can't go, okay, you pick 425, I'll pick 426. But this definitely can be done every week. The next bet, which I will credit Vin for, it was totally his idea, is the Monday Night Football double-digit wins. All that is you pick how many Monday Night Football games will be decided by 10 points or more. Last year there were 7 out of 16. The year before that there were 10 out of 16. This year there are 17 games. I suggested setting the over-under somewhere at 9.5. I haven't really looked at the Monday night schedule this year, but Vin, as you pointed out, and I agree with, Monday night games have just gotten so boring over the last few years, pretty much ever since they moved to ESPN, I think. And unlike Sunday night, they don't have... Yeah, well, unlike Sunday night, they don't have a flex schedule. With Sunday night football, they have, at least I think they do, they have the ability to switch out their game for a better game, a game that will be better competition, generate more ratings. Monday night doesn't. It's set in stone. Every Monday night game, you know what it's going to be at this point. And with the NFL being so unpredictable as it is, with there being so much parity, you could set what looks like a good matchup now, and by week 12, it's two of the worst teams in the league playing each other, and that seems to happen a lot. Vin, this was your baby here, so any expansion on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, that's what we're talking about here, is the lack of the flex schedule. Look, Monday Night Football has been terrible for almost two decades, and the reason it's been terrible for almost two decades is you're right, Dan, it's the lack of the flex scheduling. You pick up matchups that look good in the beginning of the year, and you put them all on Monday Night Football, and they're just completely awful by the end of the year, and you can't get out of them. And it gets to the point where fans are more interested in Al Michaels making covert references to gambling than they are the actual outcomes of the game. I mean, he and John Madden actually got into an argument once over what the right play at the end of the game was, with Al Michaels trying to tell Madden that the fans wanted one team to do this so they would cover, and Madden going, but that's the wrong play. And so you've got things like that. And, yeah, that's why this is a fun bet, because you get these double-digit wins, and then you get backdoor covers, and it gives you a reason to stay up to watch the game, because without any gambling interest whatsoever, there's no point.
And that's what
point watching Monday Night Football.
That's what all of this is all about. It gives you action. It gives you a reason to care. I mean, not that the NFL isn't great on its own, but it's the best consumer sport there is, because there's so many awesome ways to bet on it, and it's just, you know, it fills your entire Sunday, and it's just amazing. So let's move on to the next one we have here that was also Vin's idea, and this is scores a touchdown first on NFL Red Zone. For those of you unfamiliar with NFL Red Zone, it's basically just a TV channel that brings you live to any play that's in the red zone, which is a team being somewhere within the 20-yard line. So the key here is you're basically deciding which team, and these are only teams playing in the 1 o'clock games, because you'd have to be insane to pick a team in the 4 o'clock games. You'd basically be saying all the teams in the 1 o'clock games are going to play 0-0 shutouts. But you're picking which team will score a touchdown first on NFL Red Zone. So that doesn't necessarily mean the first team that appears with the ball in NFL Red Zone, because that team could not score. They could kick a field goal. You're picking which team will score a touchdown first. And I think that's a really great way to kick off your NFL Sunday, is, you know, hopefully win a quick bet against your friends in that regard.
And as someone who's always looking for new
proceedings.
I'm sorry?
It brings some degeneracy to the proceedings.
Because there's not nearly enough
need,
of that.
We need more.
And to add a little more, you know, there's no reason why you couldn't say, okay, this is the 1 p.m. batch and then this is the 4:15 batch or the 4 o'clock batch. You know, you certainly could, you know, could pick the second round of games
sure.
as well.
Sure. The difference, though, with the 4 and the 4:15 is that exactly that. Some games start at 4, some games start at 4:15. With the 1 o'clock games, they all start at 1. Maybe some a few minutes later than the others, which could hurt you, but you never really know when that's the case. But so that's why I mostly like it for the 1 o'clock games. But I can see it working both ways. All right. So our next way to get action during the NFL season is DraftKings, and I have never done DraftKings before. I'm definitely going to try it this year. It's basically like it's a daily fantasy sports site that looks like an online poker room. You essentially enter a tournament, which can be heads up. It can be against 5 people, against 10 people, it can be against thousands of people. And you're given a salary cap, and you draft a team filling in using your salary cap, and then you just compete against everybody else in the tournament. And if you're playing heads up, you have to score more fantasy points than the person you're playing against, just like you would if you were in a fantasy football league. If you're playing in a 1,000-person tournament, then you're just trying to score the most points amount of possible. And the prize pool is set much like an online poker tournament. The first place probably gets 25%. Second place gets X amount. Third place gets less. And you can get paid out down to however many spots they decide to pay out. And I think that's a really, really interesting dynamic to fantasy football that I've never tried before, but I'm really looking forward to giving it a shot this year. And I'll probably lose a lot of money on it.
Yeah, they're certainly, you know, they aren't the first to do this either, but I think they've been among the most successful. FanDuel is another site that does a similar thing. I think with football, it works really well because your defined period is a week. You know, with baseball, you can do baseball as well because you can do, like, well, for this day, these are all the best players. And baseball is probably, honestly, they may make the more money in baseball just because there's a lot of, because of the daily aspect of it, whereas opposed with football. But I have a feeling that with football, you're going to get a much higher rate of participation or, you know, much higher numbers. And I think those multiplayer tournaments are what are really interesting. You know, it's fun to play heads up and try to double your buy-in. But, you know, the idea of, you know, taking $2 and turning it into 2,000 is kind of fun.
There's another aspect to this, which is that everyone thinks they know a little bit about football. And you can't say the same about baseball. And you can't say the same about basketball. You can't say the same about hockey. Those are games and those are sports where you have devoted aficionados who know so much about the game you can't hope to beat them. But in football, everyone feels like they got a shot at winning. And that changes the dynamic completely. And I think that makes it more interesting because
unlike
you have
online poker,
enough,
so even
you
though
have
the same
sort of
type of structure as a poker
guys
tournament,
and your stat nerds and all that
with
sort
poker,
of stuff, you, got
you
those
can,
guys. But you also have
you
your
can sort of get
fans that know a fair amount
by
about
another
the
player.
Well,
whereas with this, it's almost like you're playing against yourself in that nobody else is affecting the outcome. Obviously, the players on the field are affecting the outcome, but you're not playing other people. You're just doing the best you can with your salary cap, and you're picking your own players, and you don't even have to – it's not like a normal fantasy football draft where you can't get the players you want. It's you feel like you're controlling your own destiny with this.
Absolutely. And if you feel like you know a little bit enough the game or enough about the game to compete, it makes it interesting. So I think it actually appeals to a much wider section of the populace than the daily fantasy betting for baseball or basketball.
Mm-hmm. All right. So our next way you can wager is a pick'em pool. And I think most of us have done this. It's usually the standard office pool. It's what we do every week on our podcast. We pick every game against the spread. And in a pick'em pool, generally, you just get, you know, however many games you get right adds to your total at the end of the year. Whoever has guessed the most games right wins. You can also have weekly prizes for whoever gets the most right during the week. There's really not much else to say here about this. it's pretty straightforward. Now, the next one is the confidence pool. which is exactly like the pick 'em, except in this case, you rank your picks. If there's 16 games, you rank them 1 through 16 based on how confident you are. So the game you're most confident on, you assign a 16. The game you're least confident on, you assign a 1. And this works the same way in that you get points. Your total amount of points gets added up throughout the year. You can also have weekly prizes for whoever gets the most points. And unlike a pick'em pool, there's a much wider range of points that you can get. You can go 1 through 16 in the pick'em pool. In the confidence pool, I think with 16 games, it goes all the way up to 128.
I think it might be 132, actually.
132? You're probably better at math.
No, I remember. It's either 132 or 136. I remember.
It is 136.
Remember one year we had somebody that had a perfect week. I think once we've had a 16-0 week in the 4 years that we've done this. So.
I think the key to both pick'em pools and confidence pools is remembering to get your picks in.
I beat Vin every year because there's usually one week where he just flat out forgets and I get like a free 80 to 90 point jump on him.
I just did the math on my little calculator here. It is 136, Aaron. And going back to your point about missing a week, in the confidence pool that I am in, the commissioner has set a very generous rule that your lowest weekly point total is wiped away at the end of the year. So that could mean you just have an awful week, or it could mean you forget and miss a week. So if you do that once, that won't count against you. And I think that favors the casual player a lot more. It entices someone who, you know, maybe feels, I might not be able to make the commitment or you know, I'm really bad at this. It gives them a little bit more incentive to get involved.
I already know I'm missing the first weekend in October. You can just write it down in red letters right now. That should be my forgiveness week right there.
Well, there you go.
I'm not implementing that rule, Vin, because then you might beat me.
All right. So our next way to bet on the NFL is a fantasy rotisserie league. I said this in the article. Everybody knows about fantasy football, but a rotisserie league works a lot differently. Whereas in your typical fantasy head-to-head league, you play someone else each week. You try to get the most points. In rotisserie, there's a couple different ways you can do it. The standard way for football is you set your lineup the same way. You try to get the most points in the week, and then at the end of the then your points are added on every week. And at the end of the year, the winner is decided by who has the most total points at the end of the year. And so it takes away the arbitrary nature of the win-loss aspect of fantasy football, in that in a head-to-head league, you can have an incredible week. You can have the second most points in your league by far, and you can still lose because you played the guy who somehow beat you, who had the best week. In a head-to-head league, that gets you nothing. That just gets you lost. But in a rotisserie league, scoring a lot of points, whether you're first or second, is going to go a long way towards your end-of-the-year total. The other way to do a rotisserie league, which I've done in baseball, is instead of counting total points, your stats are broken down into categories. And let's say there's 10 teams in your league. You could have passing yards as a category, and you are trying to accumulate the most passing yards over the year, but instead of getting fantasy points for a certain number of passing yards, you're ranked in the passing yards category. So if you're number one in a 10-team league in passing yards at the end of the year, you get 10 points for passing yards. So there is a finite amount of points that you can get. If you have 10 categories and there's 10 teams in the league, the max amount of points you can get is 100 points, and the fewest you can get is 10. And I think that's sort of an interesting twist. It also takes away the arbitrary nature of the win-loss. But really, I mean, the most fun thing about fantasy football is beating the hell out of your friends every week. And that's why number two is the fantasy head-to-head league. Everybody's done it. Really not much to explain here. So let's go on to my number one, which is the survivor or suicide pool. I call it the mother of all football pools because it can be the most edge of your seat pool. It seems like it's the easiest. You pick one team to win every week, if you in week one your team is right, you move on to next week, and then you cannot pick that team you picked in week one. And if you're right in week two, you can't pick the team you picked in week one or week two. You have to pick a new team every week. And if you're wrong, you're out of the pool. I am in a massive survivor pool this year. I was in one last year where the total prize pool is $31,000. And
oh, my God.
It's a $100 buy-in, and there's 314 people in the pool right now. Now, the cool thing
is
about
it winner take all?
Well, that's the way survivor pools work, is it's winner take all. Now, whether or not there's going to be only one person standing at the end of the year is another question. Last year, I think there were the prize pool was 26,000, and there were seven people standing at the end of the pool. And they decided – and that – it ended after the regular season, and the commissioner offered, well, you guys can try to duel this out in the playoffs. But everybody just said, you know what, we'll take the seven-way chop. And I would be thrilled with a seven-way chop in a $31,000 prize pool. So, and you know, I got down to the final 24 last year in week six. In week six, there were only 24 people left.
Oh, my God.
And that's because, you know, games like last year, week two, the Patriots lost to the Cardinals, huge upset, knocked out literally half the pool. And that stuff happens. There's upsets every week in the NFL, and you know, everybody says, okay, well, this is the easy team. I'm going to go with them this week. Then they lose, and, you know, that's looking like the Patriots this week, where I think in a lot of suicide pools, a lot of people are going to pick them. I'm not saying they're going to lose, but if they did lose, you could see a big number of your survivor pool going out.
I haven't done a survivor pool in a long time, but they are a lot of fun, and the nice thing about them is that they are so easy. I mean, that's what it is. You get in a lot of folks. It's like filling out an NCAA bracket, but it's even easier because it's just like, okay, I'll have to pick one team, and it's like, okay, well, I'm going to pick this team. And then you're done, and that's it. And you can spend 3 hours a week poring over everything, trying to come up with the ideal strategy for the whole season, or you can spend 2 minutes every week and just say, well, this looks like the best matchup. I'm going to pick that one. Have I picked that team? Nope. Okay, well, then I'm going to pick – oh, I already picked them. I'm going to pick someone else. And that's it. It's done. Well, it's really easy, and a lot of times you'll find people winning. It's just as you will in NCAA tournament pools. You'll find people winning who know nothing about football. It's just there's a lot of luck of the draw involved, but there is a lot of skill involved too.
There's a little strategy to it too, because you're trying to find the week where you know the Jets are going to win. Now that's really hard to find, but
impossible.
but you're looking for that week. That way you can use that pick and retain your Patriots and retain your Denver Broncos and retain your San Francisco 49er picks for another week. And so, I mean that's part of the strategy of a survivor pool is looking for those unlikely victories and picking them up along the way. That way when the rest of the league is knocked out or the rest of the league is looking for the Cardinals to win and you've got the 49ers versus the Bills, you're feeling good about yourself.
Right, and I implement that strategy a lot. I mean, basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to find the worst team every week with the best chance to win. This week I think that team on the board is Tampa Bay. They are at the Jets. I think just if you pick against the Jets every week, you're going to do okay. But yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay is a team where that's probably going to go 8-8, somewhere in that range, maybe 9-7. You probably won't pick them 15 out of 16 times this year. But this week, they're a good pick. And by doing that and not picking the Patriots, who are a huge favorite, well, look at who the Patriots are playing next week. They're hosting the Jets on Thursday Night Football. So by passing on the Patriots this week, you get to take them in next week when probably not as many people are taking them. So, Vin, I totally agree. I think that's a correct strategy. On the other hand, you might just want to pick the best matchup every week because there's no room for error. If you're out, you're out. And your lifeblood in the survivor pool is everything. You know, your life is everything here. I'm with you. I like to implement some strategy.
Well, that's all the non-traditional they're not non-traditional, but that's a whole bunch of ways you can bet on the NFL this season. Right now, we're going to move on to the primary way that people bet on the NFL, at least in Nevada, and you know, abroad with sports books. We're going to the spreads. And we're going to go through every game. We're each going to make our picks. for every game this season. I'd like to point out that over the last three seasons, I've been keeping tallying results and keeping stats on who's been doing well. I'll continue to do that this season. And before we start, I have to say that in each of the last 3 years, I've had the best record, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I keep score. All right, first game on the board is Baltimore.
Just like in any form of Chinese poker, you are a complete luck box.
Well, I'm also the person who watches the least NFL among the three of us, so that should tell you plenty. The first game on the board is tonight's game, Baltimore at Denver. Vin, why don't you lead us off and tell us which way you're going with this one. It's a 7-point spread. Baltimore is a 7-point underdog. You get even money on Baltimore, and you get Denver at minus 120.
Look, I understand that Baltimore's lost. Has lost some personnel. I mean, no Ray Lewis, no Ed Reed. Their tight ends are injured, all that sort of stuff. But 7 points against the Broncos defense that's lost Champ Bailey just seems like it's a bit much. I like Baltimore to cover. I'm not going to say Baltimore's going to win, but I think this line is too high. I'll take Baltimore plus 7 here.
Dan, what about you?
I like Baltimore as well. I think I'm expecting Joe Flacco to take a big step forward this year, even though he lost Anquan Boldin as number one receiver. I'm just a big Joe Flacco fan, and that does have a little bit to do with the fact that he grew up around the corner from me and played in our high school conference. But I liked a lot of what I saw out of Flacco in the playoffs last year. I think he's going to sling it out for almost 4,000 yards this year. And while I don't like picking against Peyton Manning, 7 points is a bit too much. I could see this being this game being decided by a field goal.
I'll take
over with you guys.
I think the over's at 48.5, and I think both defenses aren't going to be very good, and I think this ball's going to move up and down the field. I think the over's lock.
Well, I have Baltimore defense in one fantasy league and Denver defense in another, so I think I don't think I want to do that, or maybe I should hedge by betting on the over.
I'm with you guys. I think this is a one score game. I think I'm gonna take Baltimore here. There's a decent chance this ends up being right on the number. In which case, I'd rather be on the even money side of it than the one that's minus 120. But yeah, I think this is a 3 to 6 point game. So I'm gonna take Baltimore as well. Next game is New England heading to Buffalo to take on the Bills. New England, a heavy favorite on the road, 8.5 points. Dan, why don't you go first?
I like the Patriots. The Bills are awful, and no offense to my former boss, who's from Buffalo and a big Bills fan, but Patriots are just too good. You know, I know they're without both of their tight ends right now. Well, I guess you can't really call Hernandez one of their tight ends anymore, but he was last year, and it changes their offense. But, I mean, Tom Brady can win with the three of us as his receiving corps. So
let's not go too far.
Well, when you're playing the Bills, it's not that much of a stretch. I mean, the Bills are awful. They really don't have much of an offense. They're starting E.J. Manuel, who wasn't even necessarily supposed to play until Monday when he started practicing, and they just recently named him the starter. But, I mean, you know, upsets happen, but I can't see any way New England does not cover this game. I like them winning by over 20.
I agree with you here. I think New England's too good. Buffalo doesn't really have the personnel to match up with them well. I don't think that the loss of the tight ends is going to play that huge a factor against a team like Buffalo. I think it will be a factor against some teams with really solid defenses, but I just don't see the Bills. It's not going to be that big of a factor against the Bills.
I hitched my fantasy wagon to Tom Brady here, so he better deliver. That's all I got to say. It went against everything that it just hurt me to draft Tom Brady, but I did it, and so now I'm going with the Patriots to cover. I'm going with my fantasy football rooting interest here, but Buffalo's a mess on offense, and they're not that much better on defense. I guess the big question is, when are they moving to Toronto? I mean, to me, that's the more interesting gambling question, rather than whether the Bills are going to cover against the Patriots.
The next, that one I have no idea because you guys pay a lot more attention to this stuff than I do. Although if the Bills move to Toronto, I guess maybe I would have to start rooting for them.
Really?
No. I grew up as a Giants fan, and that's not changing. The next game on the board, Tennessee heading to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. Steelers are 7-point favorites. You get the Steelers at even money and Tennessee at -120. Vin, what do you think?
This is a tough one for me because I'm not really sold on the Steelers this season. They've got issues at running back. And I think Tennessee's going to be a little improved. I'm going to take Tennessee here. I'm not loving this pick. I wouldn't bet this with my own money. But I'm going to take Tennessee here to cover.
Dan, what about you?
I'm going Pittsburgh, and I really don't like this game. I would really stay away from this game because I don't think either team is very good. I just think Tennessee is really, really bad, and I'm not a big Jake Locker fan. Pittsburgh at home, week one. You know, they started off hot last year. I know that doesn't really mean anything, but I'm going to take Pittsburgh in this pool and stay away from this overall.
Yeah, I'm with you here. I take Pittsburgh. I'm not a huge fan of that. The bet I like the best here is actually the Tennessee on the money line, which you get at +245. That seems like it's way too high for me. Certainly, you're not going to take Pittsburgh at -305 on the money line there. But I think the best bet there is actually Tennessee on the money line from a value bet proposition. But the two things that I would bet on the money line for Tennessee and then the spread for Pittsburgh, if that makes any sense. But that's the way I see it. The next game on the board, Atlanta at New Orleans. I'll go first on this one. And when I say I'll go first on this one, it's because it's actually two teams that I might have some sort of cogent analysis for. I'm actually really surprised at the line here. It's 3 points. New Orleans is a 3-point favorite. I guess it's probably the right line, and apparently the money has been coming in on the Saints because they're at -120, whereas the Falcons are +100. To me, this is more of a pick'em game. I know the Saints are at home, but their defense was so bad. You know, their coaching situation is finally back to normal. It's the first game of the season. I know it's at home, but I like Atlanta in this game, certainly to cover, and I also like them to win. So I'm going to take Atlanta in the points. Vin, what about you?
I'm not a fan of this game at all. To me, this is a coin flip game. I'm going to go with the Saints. I think Sean Payton and Drew Brees getting back together. You're going to come out with a sharp game plan. They're going to put a lot of points on the board. I think Atlanta will hang in there for a while, but they can't keep up in the long run. I'm going to go with the Saints here. Once again, another game I don't really like, and I wouldn't bet with my own money, but I'll take the Saints -3 here.
Dan?
Yeah, I think if the opening of the Superdome was the loudest football game in NFL history, this is going to be the second loudest. And you're going to see similar type passion that, you know, when the Saints opened the Superdome again after Katrina, the year before they were a horrible football team. And then they ended up, I believe, going to the conference championship that next year. And part of that was bringing in Drew Brees, but another part of it was they just seemed to play with so much momentum. And I think that you're going to see a lot of that this year. New Orleans underperformed greatly last year. I mean, their defense was exposed, but they also got a little unlucky, regardless of the fact that they didn't have Sean Payton. Whereas Atlanta, I don't think they were as good as their 13-3 record indicated last year. I think they were a lot luckier than they actually played. And I just think New Orleans is going to blow the roof off early in this game. It'll settle down a little bit, but I think they're going to get out to a big lead and win it pretty easily. So New Orleans is my pick.
Yeah, I think we figured that out. next game on the schedule, and at some point, if you're listening to our live stream, we're going to cut out. You can catch the rest of the podcast later today at the Casino City Times family of websites, including CasinoCityTimes.com or online.CasinoCity.com. You can also download versions of the show, I believe, through iTunes. Vin, is that still the case?
Yeah, you can. Absolutely.
Okay, so look for us on iTunes if you want to listen to the rest of the podcast later today. Otherwise, for those of you who are streaming us, who have already downloaded and are listening to, continue to listen, and we'll have a little bit more NFL analysis. Next game on the board, Tampa Bay at the New York Jets. The Jets are home dogs, 3.5 points. Vin, what do you say? You love your home dogs.
I love my home dogs, but I don't love the Jets. Oh, my goodness. What a mess they are. This is going to be the first of possibly 16 consecutive picks against the Jets. I'll take Tampa to win on the road.
Yeah, dog is the understatement of the year. I'm probably going to go against the Jets every week until the spread gets into the 30s. Tampa Bay, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, they're going to be an 8-8, 9-7 team, but they're just leaps and bounds better than the Jets. I like them to win by double digits.
I just want to throw out this interesting side of covers.com. They do their consensus analysis, but 74% of the money is coming in on Tampa right now, according to covers.
Wow. You got to go against the public money. I'm going with the Jets. I think they're going to surprise people this week. You never know what's going to happen. I think the Jets are going to surprise people, and that's based on absolutely zero analysis. Next game, Kansas City at Jacksonville, the game that no one except for maybe the players' families and friends want to watch, and probably even most of them don't want to watch it either. The Jacksonville Jaguars are 4-point home dogs. Dan, what do you say?
Well, I think the family and friends are going to be watching the Falcons Saints games because it's just that much more interesting. But I'm going with Kansas City here.
Well, this is the second worst game on the schedule. I mean, because the Jets are the worst.
Yeah, well, it's probably more interesting than the Jets game because I think the Jets are going to get blown out, and this is just going to be two bad teams playing awful football against each other. But, you know, Andy Reid, first game in Kansas City, new quarterback, Jacksonville is awful. You know, I hate this game. I would stay away from it, but I'll go Chiefs to cover 4.
Ben.
Here's all you need to know about this game. Blaine Gabbert is starting at quarterback for Jacksonville. I'll take the Chiefs.
I could not have told you that before you just said it, but it provides me further ammunition to say, yes, I will take the Chiefs as well. A lot of consensus picks. Well, I guess 3 out of 6. All right, we're entering the point where we should probably do a little bit more quick-fire analysis. We've got, I think, 10 games to go here. So next game is Cincinnati at Chicago. The Bears are 3-point favorites at home. Vin, what do you say?
Yeah, this is an interesting game because these are two really pretty good football teams that have improved a lot. These are two teams with playoff aspirations. I've got to admit, I'm kind of liking the Bears at home here. I think the defense does well. I think the offense picks up a little more scoring punch with the new coach. I'm going to go with the Bears with this one. Don't have a great feeling about it, but I'll take the Bears.
Dan.
You know, I also don't like this game at all because I'm always high on the Bears every year for the past few years, ever since they've had Cutler. And I think Cincinnati's going to be, you know, maybe one of the top 5 or 6 teams in the NFL this year. So I'm going to go with Cincinnati, and that's mainly just because Chicago has let me down every year that I've been high on them. So now that I'm down on them, I'm sure they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but we'll see.
It seems like every year Cincinnati is like this team that people think, oh, you know, well, this is going to be the year, and then they really just don't do anything. So I'm going to stick with that feeling. I'm going to go with the Bears here. I think they're going to start off on the right foot, and the Bengals are not. Next game we have is Miami at Cleveland. The Browns are 1-point favorites at home, and it's almost a pick 'em game. Dan, I'll let you go first.
I think the Browns are ready to take a big step forward this year, and that's not because I'm a Brandon Whedon believer, although I think he's competent enough to manage games with their talented running core and their great defense. I think they're going to compete for a playoff spot this year in a weak AFC North. Notwithstanding Cincinnati. And I like them to win week one at home against Miami.
Vin.
Yeah, I like the Browns here too. I think the Browns are an improved thing. I think Miami's going to be one of those teams with really weird home-road splits where their home games are going to play fairly well at home and they're going to be lousy on the road. I'll take the Browns at home.
I'm going to go – I'm going to be the contrarian. I'm going to pick the Dolphins here. Part of it is I think, you know, the AFC East teams in recent years have been exposed by the Patriots as – you know, they get blown out by the Patriots a whole bunch of times, and it makes them look worse than they really are. Now, I'm not going to make the argument that the Bills, the Jets, or the Dolphins are top-tier teams, but I think that they might not be quite as bad as they appear to be. And for that reason, I'm going to pick the Dolphins.
You would be wrong.
Next – well, we'll see. You know what? It's all we'll see what happens. 3 years in a row, Vin. That's all I have to say. Next game: Seahawks at the Panthers. Panthers home dogs, 3.5 points, and you get Seattle at even money. Panthers at -120. Dan, I know you're pretty high on the Panthers this year. What do you think?
Well, I'm really, really high on the Seahawks, but I also think the Panthers are going to improve, and this is the one home dog game that I'm gonna concede and go with the Panthers. I'm really excited to see what Cam Newton does. He presents a lot of problems for any defense, even one as talented and as fast as Seattle. While I think Seattle could easily win 13 games and compete for the Super Bowl, I'm going to go Carolina to cover the 3.5 in week one.
Vin.
Yeah, I like Carolina here, too. I like my home dogs, but I think in this case it's justified. I think Carolina's got pretty good talent on both sides of the ball. Not great talent, but pretty good talent on both sides of the ball. And I don't really like my teams coming out west and how they do. And so, yeah, I'll take Seattle. And is this a 1 o'clock start?
Seattle or Carolina?
Seattle, Carolina.
Yeah, but are you going to take Carolina?
I'm taking Carolina.
Okay, you said Seattle, so I just wanted to confirm. Your whole analysis was that you were taking Carolina, and then you said, so I'll take Seattle.
My connection
is. It is a 1 o'clock start.
It is a 1 o'clock start, and I don't like the West Coast teams coming out for 1 o'clock starts. I like Carolina in this spot. I think it's a good spot to cover.
Next game on the board. My Minnesota Vikings taking on your Detroit Lions, Vin.
How did they become your Minnesota Vikings?
Because I want them to make the playoffs. So therefore, I've got to pick them against the spread against Detroit. They're 5.5 point underdogs. Christian Ponder, is that his name? Is he the quarterback?
Yeah, he is the quarterback.
I'm legitimately asking that question because I don't know the answer. But I'm going to take Minnesota here based solely on the fact that I really, really, really want them to make the playoffs so I can, you know, gloat about how you guys both owe me $20. So I'm going to take Minnesota.
Yeah,
Dan, what do you think?
I'm going Detroit here, and I think we've made it very clear my feelings about Minnesota. I think Detroit at home, Stafford coming out, going to just have a humongous game this week. Yeah, that's pretty clear.
Vin?
Yeah, as long as Christian Ponder's the quarterback, I'm taking Detroit, the Lions, to cover.
Well, what's their other option?
Minnesota?
Well,
yeah.
It doesn't matter what their other option. The fact that Ponder is their number one option is the point.
Yeah.
All right, next game, Oakland going to Indianapolis. Biggest spread we've got on the week this week, 9.5 point favorites for the Colts. Dan, what do you think?
I like Indianapolis. I'm going with them in my survivor pool. I'm looking for Andrew Luck to take a huge step forward this year, even though he did have a very good year last year. He did throw for a lot of picks. I just think he's going to be an elite quarterback, as we like to say, and Oakland is awful. Indianapolis on that turf is going to be fun to watch.
Vin.
The fact that Oakland is considering starting Terrell Pryor is all you need to know about this game. I'll take the Colts big. And just for the record, Terrell Pryor, worse than Christian Ponder.
Never heard of him. Regardless, I'm taking Oakland. I think I don't like big numbers. I did an analysis, I think last year, about halfway through the season, where the point spreads of over a touchdown, the underdogs, I think, overperformed. So I'm gonna take the Raiders here.
By the time the season is over, the Raiders might be worse than the Jets. I'm just throwing that out there.
Big number. Next game on the board: Arizona at St. Louis. The Cardinals are 4.5 point underdogs on the road. Dan, I'll let you go first again.
I like Arizona in a battle of two of the worst offensive teams in the league. Although Arizona's offense will probably improve this year with Carson Palmer taking the snaps, I like that excitement with Palmer being able to throw to Larry Fitzgerald. I don't know if they'll win this game because St. Louis was a pretty good home team last year, but I do like them to cover the 4.5 that they're being given.
Vin?
Yeah, I like the Cardinals at home. Cardinals had good home road splits last season. I think the Cardinals are going to be improved. This is another game that I'm not a real big fan of from a betting perspective. There are better games on the board to bet on, but if you're betting it, I'll take the Rams. I'll take St. Louis.
You got to keep your team straight, Ben. You liked the Cardinals at home. I know it used to be the St. Louis Cardinals, which is probably
yeah,
what's confusing.
The problem is St. Louis used to be the Cardinals. And I'm
yes,
old enough to
yes.
remember that.
Where, and they and, still are the Cardinals in baseball.
And they still are the Cardinals in baseball. So I like St. Louis's home splits is what I'm trying
okay.
to say.
All
and
right.
So, and I think they're a little better team. I think Jeff Fisher's a very good coach. I think the Cardinals are better with Carson Palmer at quarterback. They're just not going to win this game. So I'll take the St. Louis Rams.
All right. I'm going with the Rams as well. I believe Steven Jackson still plays for the Rams, correct?
No, he plays for
Atlanta,
I believe.
Yep, he plays
Oh, okay. Well, that changes my analysis, but regardless, I got to stick with what I got written down because I don't have room to change it. I'm going to the Rams. Dan, you can see why I've won this the last 3 years, right?
Exactly.
Next game should be a really entertaining one. It's certainly the best of the 4 o'clock games on Sunday. Green Bay at San Francisco. The 49ers are 4.5-point favorites at home. Vin, what do you think?
I'm going with the home team in this one, San Francisco. I think Green Bay, I mean, this is going to be a good football game. Another game I wouldn't bet on, but this is going to be a good football game, a lot of fun to watch. San Francisco did some work to upgrade on both sides of the ball this year. Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers is fantastic, but I like San Francisco at home. I'll take the Niners.
Dan?
I think this is definitely the game of the week, played between maybe the two best teams in the NFL. And I like Green Bay to cover. I'm not sure who's going to win this game, but I like them to cover. I like the plus 185 on the money line for them. I can't imagine laying those kinds of odds for Green Bay to win a game because I think they are going to be favorites to win just about any game they play. San Francisco is probably a slightly better team. Their defense is insane, but I like Green Bay to come out of the gate firing this year.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dan. I think this is going to be a great competitive game. I think it comes down to 3 points. Either way, I think Green Bay can win or lose by 3 points. So 4.5 points seems to be too big a number to me. So I'm going to take the Packers. The next game on the slate, Giants-Cowboys. This is a Sunday night game. Cowboys are 3.5-point favorites at home. I'll go first on this one. This seems to me to be a bad number. I know that Dallas is at home, but the Giants, I mean, the Giants are going to be a solid playoff contender. So are the Cowboys probably too, but I think the number is too big. If this were 2.5, it would be a much harder game for me to pick, but at 3.5, I'm going to pick the Giants. Vin.
I'm going to throw the old Bill Simmons reverse jinx out there. I'll pick the Cowboys -3.5.
Yeah, to me, this is a field goal game, and based purely on that, I'm going Giants.
All right, and then we go to the Monday night games, the traditional week one double Monday. Well, I don't know if it's traditional. I think this is just is this the second season they've done two Monday night games?
No, they've been doing it for 10, 12 years now, Aaron.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think it's been that long. We will look that up.
Just for week one, they've done it for several years now, maybe five or even more than that.
I would give you maybe five. I will take the under on 10 to 12.
Oh, definitely.
All right. So the first game of the Monday night session is going to be Philadelphia at Washington. I wonder how the other conferences feel about this. We got two of the three primetime games that are happening in the NFL, our NFC East games. But regardless, the Eagles are playing the Redskins. The Redskins are 3-point favorites. But you're getting the Eagles at plus 105. You're getting the Redskins at minus 125. Dan, what do you say?
I'm going with the Eagles because I'm
you're
an Eagles
fan.
That's the perfectly legitimate reason to go with the Eagles.
That rationale did not do me very well the last 2 years, but I'm not going to bet against them. So,
Vin.
I am going with the Eagles here, primarily because I think this offense is going to be really good, and I think the RG3 is going to have a little bit of rust after not playing in the preseason coming off the surgery. And so I am not on the RG3 suspend wagon as of yet. I will take the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm with you guys here, which means, Dan, I'm sorry that we're probably going to lose this bet. When we have consensus picks, we don't always do very well, and I'm sorry to tell you that your Eagles are probably going to start off 0-1. But I am going to take the Eagles for the reasons that you listed, Vin. But also, I love it when you can bet against the spread and get better than even money. I don't love it when you're only getting 4-5 or whatever. I think that's what -125 means in you know, fractional betting. So I'm going to take the Eagles here as well. In the last game of the week, the Houston Texans head west to take on the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers are 3.5-point home dogs. Vin, go.
Oh, I want to pick San Diego, but I can't. They're terrible. I'll take Houston.
Dan.
Going Houston. I think this is one of the easier picks of the week in my confidence poll. I think I assigned it 15 or 16. I think this is a pretty easy one. San Diego's bad.
Yeah, and I'm with you guys. I think Houston's offense is going to be too much for San Diego to overcome. And
so that
therefore,
a consensus
it's another.
Pick?
That is another consensus pick. So we will know by the end of Sunday night who is the Casino City champion of the week. We'll be sure to tune in next week to the Casino City Gang, where I will have all the stats and numbers about how I went 16-0, and these guys, well, they missed anything that they didn't pick that anytime they picked against me, I'm sure. But that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Gang. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to come back next week so you can hear me gloat, or more likely so you can hear me explain away all the missteps that I took. And you'll get next week's picks as well, and I'm sure there'll be two or three other interesting topics to discuss in the gambling world. Guys, anything to add as we open the NFL season tonight?
Go Giants.
I don't have much to add other than that this Green Bay-San Francisco game, you know it's going to be a great game because for the last 2 years, it feels like any time San Francisco plays another good team, that game is always like a marquee game from the season. And I'm thinking back to last year when they played Green Bay, last year when they played Seattle, the Super Bowl last year. I mean, obviously playoff games and Super Bowls are always great, but even in the regular season, it seems like San Francisco just makes for a very entertaining matchup. They're a fun team to watch.
I'll tell you the thing I'm interested in seeing in that San Francisco game, though, is Colin Kaepernick and whether he's improved or whether he's the same quarterback he was last year. And to me, that's going to dictate a lot about how San Francisco's season goes.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and join us again next week for the next edition of the Casino City Gang. Casino City Gang does not endorse any illegal gambling. Please be sure that all gambling is legal in your jurisdiction before placing any wagers.